到轻松 baby、Yes, I'm the victim of a basketball jones. Ever since I was a little baby, I always be dribbling. In fact, I was the baddest dribbler in the whole neighborhood. Then one day, my mama bought me a basketball.I took that basketball with me everywhere I went. That basketball was like a basketball to me. I even put that basketball underneath my pillow. Maybe that's why I can't sleep at night. I need help, ladies and gentlemen. I need someone to stand beside me. I need someone to set a pick for me at the free throw line of life. Someone I can pass to.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. The show will begin in a matter of seconds, so stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. First show in a couple of weeks. Very happy and very excited to be back on the air today here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Free Farm Radio. We have a spectacular show lined up today. We are a little behind schedule, but that's okay. We'll make up for it in due time, so don't worry.So we have two live guests on the newly formatted Shukri Wright Show today. First is Tom Keegan, our old guest from the previous slot and good friend of the show of the Boston Herald. He'll join us at 5:15, about 10 minutes from now, so stay tuned for that. And as well as Los Angeles Kings writer Mike Camalito, who will be joining the show...5:35 during NHL Primetime Live. So you're definitely not going to want to miss that interview as well. He has a new book called called Hockey 365. Available now. Definitely a great read. Worth checking out. So we're going to jump straight into it. You know, the last time we were on the air, which was exactly 2 weeks ago, you know, the Patriots were still dealing with the whole Antonio Brown saga. And also, you know, still dealing with the undefeated streak, which has now since expanded to six games. 6-0 currently. Best in the NFL. You can make a case that they are the best team in the NFL. However, things are not as perfect as they seem down in Foxborough. They're not. Part of the reason why is because this team has issues. And one of the things that concerns me about this Patriots team, and I absolutely hate to be the negative Willie here, but the fact of the matter is this. The thing that concerns me most about this team is the offensive side of the ball. We're talking about a guy in Brady who, on Thursday night, if you paid attention to the post-game show after the game, Brady was not happy. He was not happy with the offense. He's not happy with the offense is at this stage of the season as we have an early start on looking ahead to week 7, which will be the next Monday night against the New York Jets down at MetLife Stadium. He's not happy with what the offense is, and this offense has issues. Number one, the Patriots, I just feel there are times where they struggle to have any type of offensive continuity. And two, Brady is taking an uncharacteristic amount of sacks in the first few weeks of the season. And especially if you go back and you watch, the first half of the Patriots game on Thursday night, there are times where the New York Giants defensive line was able to get to Brady. And the offensive line was supposed to be much improved, much better this time around. However, that hasn't been the case. You have teams like the New York Jets. You had teams like the New York Giants. You had teams who right now, they are able to get to the quarterback. They're able to get to Brady. But then on top of that, your wide receiving core is absolutely decimated right now. Your only viable option is Julian Edelman. Josh Gordon has yet to have stepped up. He has not been the same receiver that he was just a few years ago. And not to mention that the Patriots right now, offensively, they need to do something. So the big question that I have to Bill Belichick is this. What are you going to do to address the situation that you have currently? Because what you have right now is barely getting you by right now. But come the postseason, if everything continues to line up the way that it's supposed to line up, when you face teams like Kansas City, for example, in the AFC Championship game, that's if they in fact get there, but realistically, that's what's going to end up happening. Willing to bet a lot on it, actually, if I was a gambling man. What are you going to do? There have been reports about AJ Green being available. There have been reports about potential options the Patriots may explore in terms of adding to their wide receiver depth. But the fact of the matter is this. There is concern for a 6-0 New England Patriots team right now. Defensively, they have been outstanding. Even though they allowed their first passing touchdown, which was a 65-yarder by Daniel Jones, to Golden Tate. Although they allowed that one big play, but their defense has been outstanding. But offensively, I have concerns. I'll be taking calls at 855-915-WMFO, 855-915-9636. So, as the Patriots sit here at 6-0, what are your thoughts on this team? Do you have concerns? If not, why not? Why don't you feel any type of concern? And if your concerns are in terms of the offense, I want to hear it. I want to hear what are your concerns. So we're going to start off the show talking about the Patriots. And when we bring on Tom Keegan at 5:15 in about 4 minutes, I can't wait to ask him about what he's seen so far. If my concerns for the New England Patriots offense are legit, and also, not to mention, if New England can somehow, some way, find a way to go and get a big receiver, which they so terribly need right now. And I know the whole talk has been for years, well, they never had, they only had a home run hitter of a receiver once in Randy Moss, blah, 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 blah. But the reality is this. Brady has taken 2 steps back. As being completely honest, he has. He needs, and I mean, he absolutely needs help offensively. Brady and Edelman cannot carry this offense all season long. They just can't. Because there will come a point where teams are going to learn how to game plan against those two. Although they've done a masterful job utilizing different packages and different players and different formations to mix it all up. But at some point, you got to make adjustments. And that's just the truth. Coming up next, we have Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald join us live on the show here on the Shukri Wright Show. And I can't wait to ask him about the Patriots. Tonight's a big night in Boston in regards to the Boston Bruins home opener at the Garden, 7 o'clock tonight. Can't wait. Cannot wait. I'm telling you, it's going to be great. You're listening to The Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright.
You're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford, Tufts, Reform Radio.
Had a stroke. When I woke up, I couldn't speak or walk.
145 over 92, and then I had a heart attack.
182 over 100, and I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest, and then a stroke. Everything changed. It felt like my life was over.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a heart attack or stroke are far from invisible or silent.
150 over 90, and I had a stroke. If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
180 over 110, and I had a stroke.
And I'm 33, so I never see this coming.
If you've come off your treatment plan, get back on it. Or talk with your doctor to create an exercise, diet, and medication plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed. Head to toe.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Cambió cuando me leas. serás el que siento que algo pasó, me enloqueció.
Welcome back to the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. We're going to go straight now to my buddy and a good friend of the show, Mr. Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald. Good afternoon, Tom Keegan. How's it going today?
Good. How you doing today, Shukri?
I'm doing great. It's wonderful to have you back on. You know, today being a very important day in Boston, as you might know, tonight's the Bruins home opener against New Jersey Devils at 7 o'clock puck drop at the Garden. So let's start off with the Bruins. So through the first four games, What are some of your early thoughts on what you've noticed with this Boston Bruins squad, 2019-2020 edition?
Well, that they were ready for the season, particularly the two goaltenders, Rask and Halak, both had a good trip. And, you know, the perfection line, the top line, took a game or two to get going, but now they're humming. So clearly they did some load management, but they didn't do it to the extent that it hurts how they start the season, unlike the Red Sox, who were a little too conscious of recovering from last season and not quite conscious enough of preparing for this season. And they never did dig themselves out of that hole.
And, you know, when I look at the Bruins so far in these first four games, and I agree with you, they look terrific. I really like what I saw in terms of, especially opening night in Dallas, with Brett Ritchie, you know, getting his first goal as a Bruin. You know, the goaltenders have looked great so far. But the one question that I do wonder is this. As we progress through the month of October, what are your expectations in terms of managing the minutes for veterans, especially guys like Zdeno Chara and Patrice Bergeron?
You know, Cassio will have an eye toward that, but you still have to win. And, you know, I think sometimes you can be a little too conscious of that and take your eye off the ball, or in this case, the puck.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be too worried about that. You know, the data shows that teams that made it all the way to a long Stanley Cup final start the season fine, which makes sense because you're sharper. You've had a shorter layoff than other teams. And then by the time the playoffs come around, they tend not to do very well, which also makes sense because that's almost like 2 years put together. So you know, it's going to catch up to you no matter what, so you can't just let that drive you too much, I don't think. I think you take your eye off the prize of winning, and you end up complicating matters too much, right? You know, they're going to play a lot. They're going to, manage their minutes all year, but they're going to play a lot.
For sure. For those who are just joining in live, we're talking with Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald, live on the Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. Now, the Patriots right now are the big story, being 6-0. But I started off the show talking about that there are concerns that I absolutely have and I've noticed over the last couple of weeks. And I want to ask you, especially what we saw Thursday night, do you think the lack of the Patriots having viable receiving options have become problematic for this Patriots offense? And if so, do you think it will hinder their ability to make another deep run for another Vince Lombardi trophy come January?
I still think, you know, you look around the league, there's no perfect team. That's one area that's an imperfection. But I like Jacoby Myers. I think he's, rookies have trouble getting on the same page with Brady. But I think he's smart, and I think he's a good player. And I think the bigger problem for the Patriots is the offensive line. And there are no quick fixes there, although Isaiah Wynn should come off, pretty soon and help him. He's only played two NFL games, but he's physically definitely an upgrade over Marshall Newhouse. So that'll help, but, you know, losing Andrews all year hurts.
Yeah.
But to go all the way from just saying they have imperfections to saying they can't make a deep run, I think is a huge, huge leap that I disagree with.
Now, I personally don't think that they can't make a deep run, but there are legitimate concerns. Like, one of the things that I've noticed, especially between the game against Washington and then the game against the New York Giants, the offensive line has struggled in pass protection. Do you think it's a byproduct of the Patriots missing David Andrews, or do you think there's a little bit more behind that?
I think that it's a combination of David Andrews and then more so the left tackle Isaiah Wynn in terms of pass protection. And also, the tight ends are not great blockers. They really aren't. Lacoste hasn't been able to play all that much because the injuries or practice that much.
Yeah.
But Izzo looks like he gets overpowered as a blocker sometimes. So, you know, all bets are off if that lack of pass protection leads to an injury to Tom Brady, obviously. But if they can keep him on his feet, you know, they've got as good chance as anybody, or probably better chance than anybody, of winning the Super Bowl.
For sure. We're talking to Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald, for those just joining in live on the Shukri Wright Show on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. Another question I want to ask you, and I want to talk briefly about the Red Sox, to keep it short and brief. We're getting to a point in baseball where we're getting deeper into the postseason, which is already in progress. The Red Sox still have not made any decision in terms of who are they going to hire in terms of a new general manager. What do you think is the Red Sox approach in regards to hiring a new GM, and if anything, are they actually do you think they're doing their due diligence and making sure that they hire the right qualified guy to take over a Red Sox roster that's just coming off a year removed of winning a World Series?
Well, they're trying to, certainly. They're trying to do their due diligence. And the thing is that Major League Baseball doesn't want you announcing any moves until after the World Series is over, so... you know, you got that to contend with, and you know, they're looking at the Dodger guy, the Cup guy. We're interested. They look at him.
Yeah.
I don't know that he is, but
Joe,
yeah, they'll make what they think is the right hire. But I hope it's not too much with eyes that whole analytics obsession. The pendulum's going to swing back a little bit, at least. I mean, it's gotten a little crazy, a little out of hand. To the point where they're coach out of pitch hitters and they're target for pitchers. And when you shrink it, this guy hits 136 against balls in the upper outside quadrant of the strike zone, so you got to throw it there. Well, okay, you've just given him a teacup to throw into. He's going to get behind on the count. He's going to get hammered, or he's going to walk guy.
Now, I got to ask the big question right now, and I'm sure that's weighing a lot on the minds of Red Sox Nation. Do you think that the Red Sox bring back Mookie Betts, J.D. Martinez, or do you think they're both no longer in Red Sox uniform come opening day 2020?
I think if J.D. Martinez opts out, and that's up to him, I think that they will walk away from J.D. Martinez at that point.
Yeah.
And I think once they see what's out there, and a lot of this depends on the new GM, obviously, but once they see what's out there for Mookie and see that they can't get value for him because he only has 1 year left and he's made it clear he wants to go to free agency,
yeah,
I think they end up keeping him.
Yeah. And last question I want to ask you before I let you go. Now, the Celtics have looked good so far in the preseason, and I know it's very early. And I want to get your take on this. Gordon Hayward has become an even more important key cog to the Celtic offense, especially now that Kyrie Irving is no longer there and so forth. What type of season can the Celtics realistically expect from Gordon Hayward, especially if he is going to work out playing alongside like Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown?
Well, I think they can expect a much better season from him for a couple of reasons. You know, his one extra year removed from that awful injury is one reason. And then the other reason is, if you really look at the numbers, and I did this, and you look at the numbers playing with Kyrie Irving on the days Kyrie Irving was in the lineup and Howard was, you know, healthy to play, the both of them,
yeah,
at the same time. Howard's numbers were lousy. When you look at the games that, Hayward's numbers were lousy. You look at the games Hayward played, and Kyrie did not. Hayward's numbers were excellent. So I think he is going to be the biggest benefactor of Kyrie Irving not being here.
Well, thank you so much, Tom, for coming on. Bruins Devils tonight, puck drop home opener at the Garden. Look forward to reading your article for the Boston Herald hopefully tomorrow morning.
All right, thanks.
Definitely. Thank you so much.
Yep.
That was Tom Keegan of the Boston Herald. That just joined us live on the Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. Coming up next, NHL Primetime, and Mike Camito will join us just shortly. Cannot wait to talk some hockey with him. He's a writer for the Los Angeles Kings as well as the author of the new book, Hockey 365, as well. That and much more coming up next on the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You are listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, Tufts Reform Radio. NHL Prime Time, powered by the Shukri Wright Show. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM WMFO Medford Tufts Freeform Radio. We have coming up in just a matter of seconds, actually, Mike Comito, hockey writer for the Los Angeles Kings, and he is an author of the book Hockey 365. Cannot wait to speak with him just momentarily. Plus, we gotta talk Bruins because tonight is, in fact, the home opener for the New Jersey, for the Boston Bruins. 7 o'clock, first home game for the Bruins regular season since Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals. And without further ado, I'm gonna bring on my guest, again, hockey writer for the Los Angeles Kings and the author of Hockey 365. Available now on Amazon for paperback and as well as on Kindle. And this is the Shukri Wright Show. We want to welcome in on Mike Comito now. Mike, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Thank you so much. Now, I got to ask you, you covered the Kings, and the one thing that interests me about the team so far this season is, listen, they are on a youth movement, and especially we saw with this past spring's NHL draft, and as well as still you look at the roster of the Kings currently, as they still got the core group of guys that won the Stanley Cups in 2012 and 14, guys like Dustin Brown, Anze Kopitar, Drew Doughty, just to name a few. So my question to you is, after a miserable season last season, What are your expectations for the 2019-2020 Los Angeles Kings and Your thoughts on this Kings team so far in the early going?
Yeah, well, I think that everybody, especially the players themselves, are looking to prove that last year's woeful season was kind of an aberration. You know, there was a lot of issues last year, with some of the systems, and I think obviously that kind of comes down to the coaches that were in place. Obviously, that didn't work, and I think, that's been pretty apparent with a lot of the comments, the players have been saying. And I think that that's also something that we've noticed, even though it's only been three games, but the attitude going into the season, kind of leading up to the home opener tonight, is that everyone seems to be really excited about, what Todd McClellan is bringing to the team, as a new head coach and somebody who obviously has the confidence of the ownership and the management group, with the 5-year extension that he signed when he came in, right? So I think that he's bringing a more aggressive system to the Kings, that we haven't seen in quite some time. Obviously, for the longest time, the Kings were, that grinding team that would, kind of choke the offense from the other teams. They did a really effective job, but it didn't always make for the most exciting style of hockey. But I think now, with McClellan coming in, and it has only been three games, we're already seeing, Kopitar has 5 points in three games. Doughty's, looking great. He has 4 points in three games. That rivalry he has with Tkachuk is obviously entertaining in its own right. So, I mean, I think that that's what I think was really the expectations that this season, is that, I don't know if it's too ambitious to hope for the playoffs, but I think definitely there is an expectation, I would imagine, among the fans and the players that they have to kind of shake off what happened last year.
And, you're an Ontario guy. And I got to ask this because, as someone who is a big fan of the sport, it really surprised me when the Toronto Maple Leafs decided that they were going to name John Tavares their new captain on opening night against the Ottawa Senators. And it surprised me for this one reason, because, one, I was expecting that they would probably go with a veteran guy. And obviously Tavares being a veteran, but I wasn't expecting, he's still, quote-unquote, the newcomer. He's a second year on Toronto Maple Leaf, and obviously with the whole controversy surrounding Austin Matthews based on what he did in Arizona. So I want to ask you, do you think that Tavares is the right fit to be the captain of the Toronto Maple Leafs? And if so, how do you think this would impact Austin Matthews' leadership role with the club moving forward in the next few years?
I think right now, absolutely, John Tavares is the right fit and the right choice to be captain of the Maple Leafs. I think that given everything that happened in the lead-up to last season when he signed as a free agent and obviously kind of fulfilled the start of his childhood dreams to come back and play for Toronto, he's been a captain elsewhere. He's represented his country internationally in leadership roles as well. I think ultimately that, obviously, I would imagine that Austin Matthews probably had his sights set on that scene. I think what happened over the course of the summer, not only just with the incident itself, but perhaps even the handling of the incident, by him not disclosing it earlier to the club and maybe having, a frank conversation about some of his behavior. That I think it's, I don't see an issue, with having him wait. I think that we've seen in other teams where you've had different leaders come in and out. The San Jose Sharks are a team that come to mind where, and you've had that core together for a long time, where you had Patrick Marleau as the captain, and then Joe Thornton was the captain, and then Joe Pavelski was the captain. And so even though, there was the time, obviously, when Thornton wasn't the captain, he was still obviously very significant, and it still is a significant part of that team, has a very vocal leadership style. So I think that ultimately, kind of having Matthews kind of focus on his game, especially in this, getting into the start of that big contract, focusing on scoring some goals, and then maybe kind of coming under John Tavares' wing. I don't think there's anything that would suggest that by Tavares becoming captain now, that there's not an opportunity down the road for Matthews to take on that more, formal leadership role. But, time will tell.
For those just joining live, we're talking with hockey writer and hockey author Mike Comito live on the Shukri Wright Show here on 91.5 FM WMFO Medford. Now, I want to talk about your book. I'm a big history guy in general. And anyone that has gotten the privilege to know me over the last several years know that I love hockey. And your book is about hockey history, in which you talk about the NHL's first games in 1917 to all the way to almost present day, in a sense. So I want to ask you, what was the key motivating factor in you writing this book? And what are some snippets of gold from that book that you'd like to share with the audience?
Yeah, well, I think that I'm a big history guy. I went to school for many, many years to become a historian. I think I'm still fulfilled that in some way as on the hockey level. But I had been writing for a couple outlets here in Canada for a few years, primarily focusing on hockey history. My Twitter account deals daily with daily moments in hockey history. So
yeah.
After doing that for a few years, the book just kind of seemed like the natural progression of all of that stuff. And so I figured, you know, kind of taking some of the stories that I've already written previously and expanding on a lot of those moments I share on Twitter, there was kind of, a unique opportunity there to kind of showcase some of that material in kind of like a word of the day calendar. So it's 365 different hockey history stories, one for every day of the year. Each story is only a page, so there's 365 pages, so to speak. And so the idea there is that you can kind of pick up the book and read through notable anniversaries, you know, throughout the year. Today, when you and I are talking, it's October 12th, which, again, if you're in Canada and you're a Maple Leafs fan, you might remember that day as that was Austin Matthews' debut 3 years ago when he scored 4 goals.
Amazing.
Becoming the first modern-day player to score 4 in his debut. So, I mean, that's an example of a story you'd find in there. That one, for me, is a fun one because my daughter was only a few weeks old, and that was the first game that her and I watched together, although she was sleeping, but she was there. She was in Maple Leafs pajamas, so that's a special moment for me. But I try to break up the book as much as I can, not focusing too much on, you know, players like Gretzky, Bobby Orr, and Gordie Howe. I mean, there's a lot of stories about those guys in there, but I wanted to kind of move the ice time around, so to speak, so that I highlighted a lot of different moments in hockey history. So there is definitely something in there for every fan, with the exception of the Golden Knights. I think when I wrote that book, they were just in the middle of their inaugural season. I remember going back and forth with my editor, hoping that if they won the Stanley Cup in the first year, I don't know if I could put out the book without some mention of the team and what they did. There's a lot of different moments. I mean, some kind of other crazy ones that come to mind. And, you know, there's a story in there. I found some interesting ones through the course of the research that I hadn't known before, Montreal Canadiens goaltender Gump Worsley went to Madison Square Garden. He got egged during a game. So he threw an egg from the stand,
wow,
hit him in the side of the head. And he didn't really know what it was at first until he realized that there was egg yolk running down his face. And he kind of laughed it off after the game, saying, like, oh, yeah, it's it was an egg. But the thing was that it wasn't so funny because he actually ended up getting a mild concussion. He didn't play for 3 weeks. So
wow,
it's kind of these stories where you look back and, like, think about how ridiculous that was. But there were obviously some real consequences for the Gumper there.
You know, there's something that came to mind that – that while you were talking about, like, you know, quirky stories or like from the story on the in history of the NHL, that there's one story in particular that I want to get your take on, you know, and as far as, like, you know, like black hockey players, you know, and the impact that they've made in the NHL, and the first name that comes to mind and is also well known here in these parts here locally in Boston, Willie O'Ree.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how much of Willie O'Ree did you discuss in the book? And also, what is your take in terms of his impact on the sport of hockey, as well as like on a social level as well?
Yeah, absolutely, and it's great that you asked that. Willie O'Ree is the first story in the book. He takes January 1st, New Year's Day, because that was the first. It wasn't his NHL debut that I focused on, but it was the time that he scored his first goal, which obviously made him the first black player to score a goal in the National Hockey League. And so I wanted to really make sure that I had some focus on O'Ree in the book, because when I was writing the book, it was when we were kind of talking about, you know, there's this ongoing debate that had been going on for many years about, you know, whether or not, I think he should have been in the Hall of Fame many years ago, but the conversation reached the point where, are we finally going to put Willie O'Ree into the Hall of Fame this year, right? And so actually, through the course of me writing the book, like, he hadn't been formally inducted yet, he hadn't got the call yet, and so actually when I was going through the editing process, I was kind of waiting to see what was going to happen, because we knew he was going to get the call sometime in the summer. The book wasn't going to come out until September, so I wanted to make sure, you know, that whatever I wrote kind of as accurate as possible, given the fact that, you know, you can't control everything and sometimes stuff gets printed and things change, right? But I think it was very fortunate that it worked out well, because we were able to put the book in a print that, you know, by the time the book went out in September, we had confirmed that he did get the call and he was going to get inducted, you know, that following November.
Amazing.
And so I think for me, like, that was a long overdue thing. Again, obviously the impact that he had, you know, from a player perspective, you know, being the first, you know, but I think more than that, you know, what he did to grow the game, you know, supporting you know, people of color and black hockey players around the country to get into the sports and really trying to, you know, break into those communities and bring hockey to them. I think that is really why, you know, he deserved to be in there as a builder. I think that coupled with his hockey career, you know, some of the reasons why, you know, he should have been in there many years ago. And, you know, and the only thing that I think that wasn't, you know, the timing of it wasn't the greatest, because again, with Gary Bettman going into the same year, I feel as though it kind of took a lot of the focus away from O'Ree and finally, I think, correcting the fact that he hadn't been in there for so long. You know, that being said, you know, we've had commissioners in the past who have been inducted while they were active. With that being said, I think that it did definitely take away from some of the spotlight that should have been rightfully put solely on O'Ree and finally getting the call.
For those that are just joining live, we are talking to Mike Comito, hockey writer for the Los Angeles Kings and the author of Hockey 365, Daily Stories from the Ice, available on Amazon and Barnes & Nobles, paperback and Kindle. You're listening to the Shukri Wright Show. You listen to NHL Primetime on 91.5 FM, WMFO, Medford. I have another question I want to ask you. And again, the furthermore we have this conversation, the more I really am getting into talking about hockey and the history of it. And we were just talking about Willie O'Ree. Now, there's a couple of guys from Ontario, specifically from the Greater Toronto Area, that come to mind who have made significant impact on the league. Like guys like PK Subban comes to mind and Wayne Simmonds. Now, it would be remiss of me not to talk about Grant Fuhr, like one of the greatest goaltenders of all time in NHL history. Now, I want to ask you, like, what was his historic impact on the game, not just so much as a black hockey player, but being a netminder for those great Edmonton Oilers teams and being able to dominate in the way that he did?
Yeah, no, I think that obviously when you think back to the string of Stanley Cups the Oilers won in the 80s, you know, obviously you think of Gretzky, you think of Messier, Curry. But the other names that come to mind is obviously Grant Fuhr and the performance he put on the playoffs. I think that, you know, even to this day, if you were to talk to Wayne Gretzky, and he touches on that in his book, where he, to his mind, Grant Fuhr is still the greatest goaltender he ever played with. And I think, you know, given that there was the high-flying 80s and, you know, still goaltending has come a long way, you know, from what it was then in terms of not only, you know, positional play, also equipment and just, like, the level of play that goaltenders have to face these days. But I think what stands out for Fuhr when he played, yeah, at the time was that, he was going to let in some goals, but you'd always have that moment in the game where he would say, you know, I've got this. You guys go and score. I'm not going to let in any more goals. And that's something that I think Wayne Gretzky comes back to throughout his book, is how that's, you know, when Grant Fuhr said that was it, he was going to shut the door, he shut the door. So they knew that they had their job to do, and he kind of had it covered in their end, right? So I think that's probably his legacy, right, is that, you know, he just had that determination. He was always, you know, ready to elevate his game to that next level and make those clutch performances when the team needed him, you know, to really clamp down and keep those pucks out of the net.
Now, from yesteryear to present day, we actually have four games tonight on Hockey Night in Canada. Two of them at the 7 o'clock hour. St. Louis, Montreal, 7 o'clock. Toronto at Detroit at 7 as well. That's over on CBC. And we have Philadelphia, Vancouver, 10 o'clock, CBC, the late game, and as well as Calgary and Vegas at 10 o'clock on Sportsnet 1. Now, in terms of tonight's games, and I look at the matchups, Montreal, they just missed the playoffs by 2 points last season. In the early going, what are some of your thoughts on the Canadiens and what they would need to do to get over the hump? And as well as the St. Louis Blues being the defending Stanley Cup champions, like, what are some of your early impressions of this Blues team as they seek to repeat as Stanley Cup champions?
Well, I think they're pretty determined to do that. They're obviously a lot of the same cores there, minus a few characters that have gone, you know, out. Pat Maroon is one who's obviously with Tampa Bay now, but for the most part, they've been kind of locking up some guys, bringing in Falk to, you know, kind of shore up the D. We'll see what happens with Petrangelo throughout the course of the season, but I think they're in a good position to defend. They're looking good so far. I mean, we obviously saw how great of a goaltender, Binnington can be. If you can pull that off again through the course of the regular season, I think they're in good shape, and I don't imagine that a lot of people don't have them, you know, on their favorites to make a push again and potentially defend. Although, you know, given how, you know, tough this league is, you know, defending the Stanley Cup is a rare thing. You know, the Penguins did it in 2016 and 17, you know, but prior to that, we hadn't seen it done, you know, back to 97, 98 with the Red Wings. So it is a tough thing to do, but again, I think they're up for the challenge. We'll see what happens again. It's always interesting at this time of the year when, you know, you're 3-4 games in, you start to see some things, you know, but is it, do we have enough of a sample size with a lot of these teams, you know, or is maybe is this a preview of things to come, or is this a complete aberration and things will kind of settle, you know, kind of figure themselves out once teams settle in. But it'll be interesting. I mean, you know, as a guy who's calling in from Sudbury, Ontario, 4 hours north of Toronto, I've watched, you know, the Canadians, the Canadians have played the Leafs already. So, I mean, the Canadians, I think, you know, if Carey Price is healthy and plays to the level that we know that he can, you know, he's one of the best goalies in the world. And so I think that ultimately, if they're able to match their play with what they're getting in net from him, you know, I think that they're in a good position to make the playoffs as well this year. It's always great when there's more Canadian teams in the playoffs. Obviously, I say that's self-serving as a Canadian, but it makes things a little more interesting, especially in that Atlantic division.
Oh, absolutely. And the Atlantic division is going to be loaded this season, and without any question. You talk about Tampa Bay, Boston, and we're gonna get to the Bruins in just a moment, and you know, like Toronto as well. So it is especially with Montreal as well, expected to make a push for the playoffs again this season. Now, speaking of the Bruins, I got to ask you, entering the season, there has been a lot of questions surrounding this Bruins team, whether if they are going to be able to make another run for the Stanley Cup again this season after coming oh so tantalizingly close to hosting the Cup in Game 7 against the Blues. So my question to you is, do you think the Bruins, given that there wasn't a lot of roster turnover during the summer, except they added like Brett Ritchie and you know, Paul Lindholm, do you think that they can make another deep run for the Stanley Cup playoffs again this season? And if not, what is the number one thing that they have working against them in order to make that happen?
Well, I think they're still in a great position, but like you said, I think that you know, one of the key things is that you play all the way until Game 7 in the Stanley Cup Final. You know, that's a lot of hockey to be played into the early part of June, so there's not a lot of rest over the summer, and especially with the team that does, again, I think that, you know, we're still one of the greatest lines of hockey right now with Pastrnak, Bergeron, and Marchand. But ultimately, you've got some of those guys in that group who've been around, you know, from the 2011 Cup. They're getting older, right? So you've got another season, again, as great as we saw Chara play at his age last year. He's obviously still played until as long as he wants to, I think, at this point. But that is a lot of wear and tear on the body. And, I mean, as these guys get older, that just becomes harder and harder to rebound from. So, I mean, I think that ultimately they're still in a really good position to do it. It's just, it is a lot of hockey. And, you know, it is really hard to climb that mountain, especially go all the way, you know, as far as they did, basically just within, you know, a few goals of winning a Stanley Cup. So, you know, I think it's a good, they're still definitely, their window is still there. Mm-hmm. How long it remains open is another story, depending on, you know, how much father time kind of catches up to some of these guys. But definitely, I think, like you said, with the minimal roster turnover they had, and as long as, you know, we start to do those guys stay healthy, you know, I think that they're in a good position again.
Last question is a two-parter, and I cannot miss on this opportunity to ask you. Now, for Canada, they have not had a Stanley Cup winner since 1993. And that was when Patrick Waugh was still a net miner in Montreal. So I have to ask you this. And when I look at the Canadian franchises in the NHL, like Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, Calgary, Edmonton, I gotta ask you, which Canadian team has the best chance currently, right now, based on roster makeup, to hoist the Stanley Cup or bring the Stanley Cup back to Canada for the first time since 1993?
I have to say the Toronto Maple Leafs. I was born as a Leafs fan, although I do cover the Kings now, where I get to write about the Kings. But yeah, the Leafs, I think it'd be hard to argue otherwise. Obviously, you've got some other clubs. I mean, you can't discount the Oilers, who have Connor McDavid. And they've got some great, you know, pieces within that roster. I don't think they really have a cohesive enough roster. I don't think they've really built enough around McDavid to necessarily be, you know, a lock this year, let's say, to compete for the Stanley Cup. I mean, it'd be great if they make the playoffs, and obviously with a guy like that on your team, you know, anything is possible. He's still more around that crew than just Connor McDavid. But I think that the way that the Leafs
are made up, you know, except besides the fact that that defense is obviously an area that needs significant improvement, you know, and even three games into the season, you know, people have been talking about that, that, you know, is this going to hold up over the year? Like, this is clearly not, you know, Stanley Cup championship type caliber, you know, defense core. You know, and Freddie Anderson has historically had slower starts to the season, so that I'm not really too worried about that. But ultimately, I think just on paper, given what they've done, you know, in locking these guys up, you know, at least for the next 5 years, they've got their basically their top nine forwards are locked up, and then beyond that, you know, obviously it's a bit of a crapshoot. But I think that what they've been building towards these last, you know, few years or even longer, if you've been a Leafs fan, you've been through the rebuild and you've been through those dark years, that they're ready to kind of take that next step, and it's just, is it going to happen? You know, as a Leafs fan who's never seen a Stanley Cup in my lifetime, yeah, it's been since 1967. You know, I can't say if it's going to happen, but ultimately, I'm kind of I'm of the mentality of, you know, just go for it, push it all in, and see what happens, because you know, you may not get it with the roster that it's made up right now with that forward group. If you can address those issues on defense, this is ultimately the best chance that the team has ever had in my lifetime to win a Stanley Cup. And I hate for them to not pull it off in 5 years, but I wouldn't be surprised if it didn't happen. But I'm optimistic.
Sounds like a little bit of the pessimism came out on being a Leafs fan.
Yeah.
But you know what? I really enjoy talking hockey with you. You know, the season is still so young, which is amazing just to even say that. I look forward to having you back on again. I really enjoyed the conversation and the interview. Everybody, check out Mike Comito's book, Hockey 365. Fantastic read if you're a hockey fan. Also, a writer for the Los Angeles King. Thank you so much for joining the show, Mike.
Well, thank you for having me. I really enjoyed talking with you as well. Happy to come on anytime of the year to talk more. We'll see what happens to some of these teams and why those developing storylines happen as we go a little further into the season.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mike.
No problem. Thank you.
Thank you. That was Mike Comito, hockey writer for the Los Angeles Kings and hockey author of the book Hockey 365, available on Barnes & Nobles, Amazon, paperback, and as well as electronically as well. Now, we have a little under 3 minutes left, so I just want to give you my final thoughts of the day. Now, tonight, the Boston Bruins have the home opener against the New Jersey Devils. They should be 4-0, but they're 3-1. If it wasn't for two goals that were called back in the game against the Avalanche on Thursday night, they'd be 4-0, possibly. But with that being said, the Bruins right now, they've looked good in the early going. Another big game with pop and circumstance. It's their home opener tonight. Looking forward to being able to check it out, watch it, and give you some thoughts on it. Phenomenal show today. Thanks to Tom Keegan of Boston Herald for joining in a little while earlier. Thank you, Mike Comito, for coming on the show to talk some hockey. Writer for the Los Angeles Kings. Author of the book Hockey 365. Thank you to the guests who joined in the show today. And I look forward to talking with you guys again next week. We'll talk some more hockey on NHL Prime Time. And as well as looking forward to potentially looking ahead to Monday night preview for the Patriots and Jets and what we could expect from that game. It's been a pleasure to be on the air with you guys again today. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Shukri Wright. I can't help but be fired up for tonight. Go Bruins. Puck drop in about an hour at the Garden. TV, it's on Nesson. Don't miss it. So definitely tune in. You're listening to the Shukri Wright Show. You have been listening to NHL Primetime. This is Shukri Wright. You're listening to 91.5 FM, WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio.